Thank you so much for the introduction, for the privilege of coming today to be a part of this lectureship. I always enjoy coming up. The drive up here is an adventure, to say the least. I come 250 all the way from Farmington, 56 miles. You do that in 40 minutes or less, you not quite, but it's an interesting trip, and we certainly appreciate the opportunity to come up and enjoy it very much. I appreciate the school. I'm one of the first graduates of the West Virginia School of Preaching. I happened to attend the East Tennessee branch of that years ago. There were more fellows from West Virginia at the East Tennessee School of Preaching than there were fellows from East Tennessee, so we renamed it the West Virginia School of Preaching East Tennessee branch. So graduated there many years ago. I'm just an old country preacher. I'm back in the little town that I grew up in, Farmington, West Virginia, back preaching to the church that I was raised in. My parents preached to me for 20 years. Now I've preached to them for about 5 now, and things are going well so far. But I'm back home with my home congregation preaching the Word of God. Been there 5 years now. It's just out in the country along Route 250 there. Some of the fellows at lunch were talking about going hunting today. And some of them had been deer hunting and elk hunting and bear hunting and things like that. And I didn't tell them how I went hunting. I went hunting last night. Went possum hunting last night about 11:30. I was ready to retire for the night. Turned the back porch light on just to make sure everything's in order. Our cat lives on the back porch. Cat has a nice little dish back there. Usually full of cat food, but there were a pair of eyes looking back at me that I did not recognize. And those eyes happened to belong to a big old fat possum who was consuming the cat's food. I decided it was time to go hunting. I didn't want to wake the family up, so I looked for the best weapon I could find. I found a baseball bat. Mark McGuire would have been proud. There's a whole new meaning to the term Grand Slam now. Anyway, there's one less possum in this world and one happier cat. But I'm glad to be here. Appreciate the theme for the week, balance. We need balance. We use balance every day of our lives. Every one of you is balanced right now, sitting on your seat. When you stand up to go out, you're balanced. You balance your checkbooks, or you get in trouble, one of the two. You balance your tires, or you wobble down the road. Balance is an important part of life. We balance our schedules. We balance our work and our home situation. We balance our time with our family, the time we need for self. We balance our work for the Lord and trying to fit in all the other things we need to do. Balance is important. But sometimes we try to balance too many things. Sometimes we try to balance the works of the flesh along with the fruit of the Spirit. And we overload and overburden ourselves. And we're not able to function as Christians. When we try to do that, we will stumble and fall. When we try to balance the world and the church, it's too much for us to handle. If there ever was a need for balance in an unbalanced world, the time is now. All we have to do is pick up the morning paper or turn on the morning news or the 6 o'clock news at night. And we cannot help but to be overwhelmed with the amount of bad news in the world today. And much of that bad news has to do with people following after the works of the flesh. When we look around us, people seem to be consumed with these kinds of things. They are not just satisfied to not be spiritual, but they want to go all the way in the other direction and involve themselves in things that the Bible describes as sin and those things that will keep us out of heaven. When those things occur, we suffer. Homes are torn asunder. Marriages split. Children are abused and neglected and often left to themselves to find their own way through this world, The workplace becomes a challenge to see how far we can get without doing something. Our schools resemble war zones. Students carry guns instead of books and knives instead of pencils. Our communities become unsafe places for our children to play. We fence our yards, we bar our windows, we lock our doors. And people seem to be consumed with buying the latest gadget or fulfilling the latest desire of all the things that this world has to offer, trying to buy things that we don't need with money we don't have to keep up with people we don't even like. Hedonism becomes a lifestyle. God becomes a byword. Religion becomes a joke. And those who live like this somehow have the feeling that they've got it made. They feel that their lives are balanced. But such is certainly not the case. True balance comes when we are willing to serve God according to His standard, the Bible. When we can learn to love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, Mark 12, verse 30, then we will realize what true balance is all about. The unbalanced life will follow the works of the flesh, while the balanced life will produce the fruit of the Spirit. And trying to balance those two, and I'm afraid that's what too many people try to do. They say, well, on one hand, we have the works of the flesh. On the other hand, the fruit of the Spirit. And that kind of balances out, doesn't it? But that's not the way it works. If we're going to be truly to be balanced, and we've got to rid our lives of the works of the flesh, and we need to start producing the fruit of the Spirit. There is just no way to balance the two. It would be like getting into the gear system of a four-wheel drive truck and gearing it so that when you put it in four-wheel drive, the front two wheels go forward and the back two wheels go backward all at the same time. And you just sit there and burn the truck up and get nowhere. And that's what we can do to our Christian lives if we try to balance the works of the flesh and the fruit of the Spirit at the same time. We cannot do it. We'll burn ourselves out as Christians. The passage for our study today comes from Galatians chapter 5. We see here a list of the works of the flesh and also a list of the fruit of the Spirit. And those go from verses 19 to 23, but I'm going to back up a couple of verses to get what we want to put forth first. Look in verse 16. I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary to one another, so that you do not the things that you wish. Can't have both and be pleasing to God. You can't have the works of the flesh and be pleasing to God. It's only when we are producing the fruit of the Spirit. What are they then? Starting in verse 19. Now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, licentiousness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murderers, drunkenness, revelries, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I also told you in time past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. Now what we want to do today is briefly look at what these words mean, and we're going to do that very briefly. We could spend a whole lesson on each one of these and be here for weeks, but we're not going to do that. And then we want to look at some areas in life where we need to apply the lessons of getting rid of the works of the flesh and start producing the fruit of the Spirit. First of all, the works of the flesh. First of all, there is adultery, which is the unlawful relationship or intercourse between or with the spouse of another person. Fornication means all illicit sexual intercourse, including adultery, homosexuality, and so on. It's interesting that in the Greek language, the word fornication begins with the four letters that we know as porn, and you can see where the word comes from. Uncleanness is the impurity of lustful, luxurious living, a person who is immoral, who has the mindset of what kind of immoral act can I get into today, wakes up thinking about being immoral. Licentiousness or lasciviousness, unbridled lust, excess, wantonness, shamelessness. Idolatry is described as the worship of false gods, and that would include covetousness, according to Paul in Colossians 3, verse 5. The word sorcery or witchcraft, the use of drugs along with spells, magical arts, and the occult. Satanism would fall into this realm. Hatred is the enmity, the opposite of what love is. Contentions would mean strife, debate, quarreling, always looking for a fight. Contentions is something that we need to avoid, along with all of these others. Jealousies, an envious or contentious rivalry. Outbursts of wrath, this is passion and heated anger that boils up and boils over. Selfish ambitions, the desire to put oneself up front, the desire to put oneself in a higher office or position, to elevate self. Dissensions means divisions. Heresies, those are the dissensions arising from different opinions or aims or false doctrines. Envy means the feeling of displeasure produced by witnessing or hearing of the advantage or prosperity of others. I heard someone speak earlier today how that preachers are not in competition with one another and that congregations are not in competition with one another and we are glad when others have good fortune. That's sometimes envy gets in the way. When we can see or hear of something good happening to someone else and the feeling of displeasure that that causes in us, that's envy. Drunkenness means to get drunk, doesn't it? Revelries, riotous, drunken parties, carousing, and the like. Anything that is like or similar to all these other things that we've already mentioned. He says to avoid those things, because if we don't, he says, those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. So we look then at the fruit of the Spirit. Love is the affection or the goodwill or the benevolence that we can extend to others. Notice the description of this found in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, a very well-known passage. Starting in verse 4, love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. The second one is joy. Joy is that gladness or that radiance or that bubbling forth like a mountain spring that you can see on the faces of every Christian, can't you? Doesn't every Christian have joy? Isn't there a radiance about a Christian? There certainly ought to be. Then there is peace. Peace is that tranquility of the soul that is assured of salvation, contented with the present lot in life, and that peace and joy and love is in the heart regardless of what this life has to offer. It's difficult at times when there are so many terrible things going on around us to keep that focus on where we need to have it for the love, the joy, and the peace, and all of these other things. But we must work at it. Long-suffering is the patience and the endurance, the perseverance, being steadfast. The word kindness is that gentleness, usableness, being sweet. Has anyone ever said to you, That was so sweet. You know what it means. It means that you were kind and considerate to others. The word goodness means a person who is upright in heart and life, one who is benevolent and helpful to others. Faithfulness means one who is trustworthy, that you can rely upon that person to keep their word when they said they would do something. Gentleness is meekness, mild-tempered, patient under injuries. Gentleness, sometimes we use the term gentleman, ladies and gentlemen, a gentle man, one who is mild and meek and kind. Self-control means that we are temperate. We have control of body, mind, and speech. Self-control. Now, where do we apply these things then? Let's first of all look at the home. If we're going to find a place where the works of the flesh need to be eliminated and the fruit of the Spirit needs to be produced, one place is in the home. How many marriages would be better off? How many marriages would actually survive with tremendous success if only the works of the flesh had been avoided? If only some heated, passionate decisions could have been avoided. But yet, oftentimes, much heartache comes. Homes are split because of the works of the flesh. If husbands and wives would learn to respect and love each other according to Paul's admonitions in Ephesians chapter 5, then the problems of adultery, fornication, uncleanness, and licentiousness would not even come up, because they would not be a problem. There would be faithfulness between husbands and wives. How often we see unfaithfulness on the part of either husband or wife, and sometimes both. Out of revenge, the one will go out and do something foolish also. And yet, it does nothing but hurt. It used to be when the word affairs came up, you were talking about a person's finances. Do you have your affairs in order? Got your banking done this week? Doesn't mean that anymore, does it? The fruit of the Spirit would produce homes where mates would be faithful to one another and also to God. The balanced home would have the husband who would have the desire to come home every day after work. The balanced home would have the wife making it a desirable place to come to every day. The husband would be loving and considerate and understanding and kind. The wife would be encouraging. She would be good to her husband. She would be of a sweet disposition. The husband would be the head of the home, and the wife would allow him to take that role. The husband would be the spiritual leader in the home. The wife would be spiritually minded. The husband would be good about helping out around the home. The wife would be the keeper at home. I don't know about you fellas, but sometimes I get caught. Someone comes to the back door and knocks on the door, and you know what I've got in my hand? A dish towel. But you also know what? I don't care. That's my home. And some of the times when life is so busy, some of the best conversations my wife and I have are at the kitchen sink. Because the boys want to avoid the kitchen sink. I don't want any part of that. They go off somewhere else, and we have that time when we can get something done together, but we can also discuss things that need to be discussed. Also in the home, the parent-child relationships would be greatly enhanced if the works of the flesh were absent and the fruit of the Spirit was present. The balanced home would have parents who love their children and children who love their parents. There would be mutual respect between the two. There would be children who would be obedient, and there would be parents who would raise their children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. The parents would see their children as gifts from God and not as just something to slow them down as they try to fulfill the lust of the flesh. The children would be asking how they could help, rather than arguing when they are asked to help. Also, there would be the proper child and child relationship, sibling rivalry. I was talking to someone just a little while ago, and we're talking about ages. I've got two boys, there's 5.5 years between them, and that's just enough because the oldest one's a senior in high school, and the other one's in the sixth grade, and the senior, well, he thinks he's got it made. I mean, everything's gone well for him. He's a good Christian boy, but sometimes little brother is too nosy because little brother wants to know everything that's going on. He wants to know who called, when they called, why they called, and he wants to call back to find out what they talked about. Big brother doesn't care for that. So there's that rivalry, but they're both good boys and they get along. But we need to instill in them the importance of the right kind of relationship so that it does not digress to the point of the works of the flesh. Not only in the home are we to find this balance, but we're also to find it in the world. Even though we live in this world, we are not of the world, John 15, verse 19. And as Christians, we are to be the light of the world, Matthew 5, 14 to 16. We need to understand to be that proper light and influence to the world for good, we must produce the fruit of the Spirit in our lives. The world needs to see that we are full of love and joy and peace and so on. The world needs to see that in us. Someone mentioned earlier about being at a baseball game and someone made a comment about the baseball, throw the baseball and use some, the language the person must have used wasn't very nice. And so I was a member of the church. Think of the damage that does to the church and to that person and to that person's family and to that person's children and the generations down the line if one person knows that that man is a member of the church or whoever it was. The damage that can be done because of the works of the flesh. People need to see in us that we are loving and peaceful and joyous people, not only in our homes, but also on the job, in the classroom, on the playing field, in our neighborhoods. People need to see in us that loving, joyous, peaceful attitude. I've been in 3 different labor unions. I was in the United Auto Workers. I was in the United Steel Workers. And I was in the United Mine Workers Construction Union. Been on strike many times. I believe if supervision and the workforce both would produce the fruit of the Spirit and lay aside the works of the flesh, there would be no more strikes. I have problems with ringleaders and initiators when it comes to labor strikes. I also have problems with supervisory personnel who are hard-nosed and hard-lined and will not give a fair day's pay for a fair day's work. There are both sides to consider. But if both sides would lay aside the works of the flesh and both sides would be loving and joyous and peaceful, certainly there wouldn't be any strikes because those in supervision would want to pay their employees right, and the employees would want to work right and would accept that fair pay. It all works out. There are some places that I might make a statement like that and get shot, but I believe that that's true. Our children and young people wield such a tremendous influence on their peers that in school, I did a wedding for a young couple this past week, and somebody came to the wedding and to the rehearsal that was a family member dating a family member on back down the line. I'd never met him before, and I asked him where he went to school, and he told me where he went. He was in, happened to be the same school that my oldest son goes to, and I said, well, do you have any classes with my son? And he said, yeah, we have, I think it's physics together. And he said, your son wants to be a preacher, doesn't he? And I said, yeah. And I didn't ask him how he knew. He says, now I can see why, because dad's a preacher. I didn't know it was public knowledge. But I believe my oldest son lives the Christian life. And if he is bold enough to tell his classmates, hey, I'm going to be a gospel preacher, that's going to put some extra pressure on him to live up to it. But other people are going to respect him too. He wasn't hiding his Christianity when he goes to school. And we as Christians need to not hide our Christianity. We need to instill in our young people the importance of living that Christian life. The world will closely watch them and wait for them to mess up. And if Matthew messes up, they're going to be all over him because he's claimed to be a Christian. They have such influence, and we need to give them the courage and help them have the courage to stand strong in the face of temptation and persecution. What kind of examples are we setting in our neighborhoods? Are we respected as families who will go to church on Sunday and then live like Christians the rest of the week? Or do our neighbors see us going to church on Sunday, but then the rest of the week we're involved in things that worldly people are involved in? Do they hear us make statements like the fellow mentioned earlier about the ball game? The language that was used. What kind of examples are we setting in our neighborhoods? Our examples in our communities are not only a reflection on our own families, they're a reflection on the church. People will connect people to the church, good or bad, and it will have generations of repercussions. So whether we are at work or at school or at play, our relationship to the people in this world needs to be one where they see in us the fruit of the Spirit and not the works of the flesh. In the third place, let's consider the church. We need to have that balance in our lives where we are producing the fruit of the Spirit in the church. If there's any relationship in life where we shouldn't have to talk about this, this ought to be the one. But I'm afraid that there are people who are claiming to be Christians who are having a claim and a claim only. They are really not living up to it. The fruit of the Spirit needs to be overwhelmingly present in our lives. We should treat other Christians with behavior that is evident that the fruit of the Spirit is produced in our lives. Such is not always the case, though, is it? Sometimes churches fight. Congregations, members, fuss and fight. Selfishness, envy, sometimes other sins involved. The works of the flesh can destroy a congregation. Oftentimes, when it comes to people in a congregation, it has to do with those kinds of sins, where there is envy, where there is selfish ambition, where divisiveness, seditions and heresies. Those things can destroy a congregation and a church. But on the other hand, when there is love and joy and peace in the heart of every Christian, we see their balanced relationship. Jesus, on many occasions, and the inspired writers throughout the New Testament spoke of how we ought to treat one another. And every time one of those is used, where we're to love one another or to submit to one another, whatever, all those that are used, they are either telling us to do something that's good for us or not to do something that would be bad for us if we did it. They are all for our good. And they have to do with Christian relationships or the church. The fruit of the Spirit will help us treat one another the way that God has required us to. When producing the fruit of the Spirit is seen in the life of every Christian, when every member of the congregation lays aside the works of the flesh, starts leading that balanced life that is by the fruit of the Spirit, then we will see elders becoming more effective leaders and shepherds. We will see deacons who are performing their duties with great zeal. We will see teachers who are teaching students and not just lessons. We will see preachers who will proclaim the truth in love. We will see all members of the church taking a keen interest in those that are lost. We will have young people looking for areas where they can serve. Business meetings will be orderly and productive. There will be no gossip or backbiting. Worship will be something that will be greatly anticipated by all members. The Bible will be accepted as truth. Changes that are unscriptural will be totally rejected, and all will be done to the glory of God. How do we get all that? By laying aside, getting rid of the works of the flesh and producing the fruit of the Spirit. There's a fourth place we need to look. Not only in the home, not only in the world, not only in the church, but there's even a starting place to go to before any of those will work, and that's in the heart. We need to get these squared away in our hearts first. Producing the fruit of the Spirit cannot come from an evil heart. Just can't do it. You don't get good water from a bad spring. As Christians, let us understand the importance where love is nourished, where joy is safeguarded, where peace is dwelling. Let's learn to be long-suffering toward others, kind toward all, good toward our fellow man and our treatment of others. Let us learn to practice self-control. But you know, even after all of this, Even with all this, there's still a battle there, isn't there? Notice the words of Paul in Romans chapter 7, starting in verse 18. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, nothing good dwells, for to will is present with me, but how to perform what is good I do not find. For the good that I will to do, I do not do, but the evil that I will not to do, that I practice. Now, if I do what I will not to do, it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me. I find then a law that evil is present with me, the one who wills to do good. For I delight in the law of God according to the inward man. But I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind and bringing me into captivity to the law of sin, which is in my members. We're still going to have battles. We're still going to have those temptations, the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. They're still going to be out there. Those temptations are still going to be strong. But when we are led by God, led by the Spirit of God in the sense that we follow His Word, we can overcome and we can handle those temptations when they come. We need to learn to put on the mind of Christ. Philippians 2 verse 5, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. We need to set our mind or our affections on things above, Colossians 3 verse 2. And we need to learn to think the right kind of thoughts. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things, Philippians 4 verse 8. Look around. Look at society. Doesn't take us long to see the vast numbers of people who are contented to live according to the works of the flesh. But these same sins have been around since the beginning of time. It's nothing new. We just find faster ways to do them with our mobile society, I guess. We must continually wage war against these sins, realizing that these sins will keep us out of heaven. We will, if we're involved in these sins, we will reap what we sow. If we sow to the Spirit, it's everlasting life. We sow to the flesh, eternal condemnation. Let's fill our hearts with the attitudes that will produce the fruit of the Spirit. May they become actions and not just attitudes. And may we make decisions that will affect the history of mankind in a positive way. Think with me for just a moment. What are some decisions that you know of that have been made in times past where people chose to be involved in works of the flesh instead of the fruit of the Spirit, and it changed history? What about David and Bathsheba? Think of all the generations involved in that. All the different ones involved. What about Demas when he forsook Paul? Lives in infamy now. Every time you read 2 Timothy, poor guy. What about Agrippa? Almost thou persuadest me to become a Christian. If he had responded differently to that, we wouldn't have that song, Almost Persuaded, because that wouldn't be in the Bible. Think of when people make decisions, one way or the other, what effect it's going to have on down the line. Now let's look at today. All of us are going to face temptations and challenges and difficult times, and how we handle those things will have a profound effect on our children, on those close to us, on the congregations where we worship, and generations to come. And it may mean literally hundreds of people saved or lost generations down the line because of one bad decision that we make today. The works of the flesh, they're not worth it. The fruit of the Spirit, it's all worth it. What kind of history-making decisions are you making today? Lead the balanced life. Don't try to balance the works of the flesh on one hand, the fruit of the Spirit on the other. That's an overload. You'll stumble and fall. There'll be no balance. But if we live our lives according to the fruit of the Spirit, then our lives will be balanced.